Welcome to Double Cross Radio. We are live from the Jefferson Republic, or the state of Jefferson, or the Pacific Northwest, however you want to put it. But we are here, and we are fighting for freedom. And I am joined tonight by my good friend Chuck Horton, my co-host. I am Drew Lamb, and our guest tonight is Tom McKergan. Tom McKergan is the Southern Oregon organizer for the Oath Keepers. And coincidentally, Tom also swore us in, Chuck and me and Jordan Page and a bunch of others at our Jefferson Republic Liberty concert that took place a few months back. When did we do that? What was that? Was that in May? I think that was May.
It was warmer, is all I remember.
Tom says it was March 22nd. Man, time flies. Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah. So it was quite a bit warmer, wasn't it? We had a pretty good turnout, and then we had the vote in June, and it almost passed. I mean, it just lost by a 5% margin, and Tony Antisto's back at it again. We had him on a few weeks ago, and they have renamed the movement the Siskiyou Republic, but we could still have little mini movements around, you know, that are all part of this movement, the Jefferson Republic movement. You know, they could adapt the same model if you want to do the same thing in your
county. You know, the original revolution were 13 independent colonies that just united in a common cause, and it was only several years after that revolution was over that they decided to form, or they started with an Articles of Confederation, which was just an agree to get along and have some various bylaws, but they retained their sovereignty. And then they decided that someone had the bright idea, which wasn't so bright, that a central government would be more powerful and it would serve all the states better. But I don't think it has. I think the original idea was better. But
yeah, and personally, I would rather not see any government at all, and I think that the Republic movement is a step in the right direction of restarting government, resetting a lot of things. We're facing a lot of tyranny right now, and we talk about the police state all the time, and it's all over Facebook and even in mainstream media now. But really, the real tyranny, you know, that keeps you from being able to do what you want with your property, to do what you want with yourself, to keep your earnings, to operate your business as you and your customers see fit. Those kinds of things are brought forth through things like administrative rules and revised statutes, things that really control us in the greatest ways, but nobody gets to vote on these things. And it's just we have just centuries of these things, just layer upon layer upon layer, and it's getting very complex, almost impossible to do business in some places. I know where we are here, it's becoming extremely challenging to do business, and especially if you operate any sort of commercial property like I do, it's very challenging to do what you want to do with your property. And if you've got a tenant with a business idea, it is not an easy process, even for straightforward type businesses. And I've operated businesses for most of my life, and I remember with my first business that I started when I was in my late teens, it wasn't long before I had a problem with the government, you know, and I had a problem with the city of Medford over their street system development charge. And I fought them and I beat them. And I learned from that experience that it was worth it. You know, it was worth it to stand up to them and to tell them that they were wrong, and then to get other people to support me. And I won. And so that emboldened me. And forever after, I've seen, you know, the workings of government as something that is anti-human, anti-freedom, anti-market, and something that for the most part is arbitrary and changeable. And then on the other hand, we have this menacing police state that's in our face and is just looking more and more violent by the day. And, you know, and there's those of us that would like to push back against this. And fortunately, we have an organization like the Oath Keepers. And I'd first heard about the Oath Keepers by listening to Stuart Rhodes. I think he was on the Alex Jones show. I had also watched a lot of YouTube videos that he was on. And I'm not ex-military, and I haven't been in law enforcement, or I haven't been a firefighter, or anything like that. But I realized that it was really important to wake up some of those people and to get them on board and to realize what was happening, and that they were being used as instruments of tyranny. And so I joined the Oath Keepers to help support them. And fortunately, we came into contact with Tom, and I'm going to introduce Tom here. Tom's a retired peace officer. This is Tom McCurgan. He's a graduate of both the Alaska and Oregon Police Academies. Throughout his career, he was a canine handler, worked in high-level security, private investigations, and police work. Aside from his usual patrol duties and investigative casework, he was a field training officer working with the Brookings Police Reserve Unit, transforming it into a model reserve program. He's the author of How to Fight a Traffic Ticket. Tom is a member of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association and is the Southern Oregon coordinator for Oregon Oath Keepers. He's been on several radio talk shows and been a guest speaker across Oregon and Northern California on the NDAA and the emerging police state. Oregon Oath Keepers were instrumental in having resolutions passed against the National Defense Authorization Act in 5 Oregon counties with more in their sights. When Tom swore an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, he took it seriously, and he took it for life. Tom McCurgan, welcome back to Double Cross Radio, my friend.
Thank you for having me on the show tonight, Drew. Very nice the opening and the introduction. Thank you.
Well, we keep skidding in sideways. Chuck was having some audio issues, so I brought us in. I don't know if I took us in the direction that Chuck had planned today.
No, it's fine. I think anything that shows the power of people working without the help of government or without the hindrance of government is a good just proof of what we're trying to accomplish. It can be done. And tonight's show is going to – I think what I was kind of planning on covering, at least for part of it, was to kind of revisit some of the stuff we were talking about last week with regards to Ferguson, Missouri, and the fact that the Oath Keepers showed up. And, you know, they weren't able to protect every building in Ferguson. There's a limit to how many they could do, but they volunteered their services and they were able to protect 4 businesses while buildings all around them were being set ablaze. These buildings were protected and they stood the night I think they're still doing fine. Completely voluntary. In fact, if they had been paid, they wouldn't have been allowed the various Missouri police officials there said they wouldn't have been able to do it because they would have required a government license to protect people's property.
Correct, acting under security officers, and they weren't.
Yeah, and which is, again, it just shows you how government's out there to help you, kind of, not really.
The biggest lie is that I'm from the government, I'm here to help you, right?
Yeah, so... So anyway, the one of the things that that really bothered me about all this is that the police presence that was there, and this included National Guard, Ferguson Police, County Sheriffs, the St. Louis County Sheriffs, and the Missouri State Police were all there in different manners or different times. I think they probably were there in rotating shifts so they could keep a presence, but when stuff started to happen, they just stood by and watched. They kind of watched the people that were peacefully protesting for the most part. I mean, they were shouting some abusive things, but I mean, I think the police could probably handle that. And they kind of let these agitators or these outside people or whoever it was go down and start all these arson events. And Meanwhile, the people that were there, the oath keepers that were there, were stopping those kinds of events from happening in the properties that they were protecting. And that included a Chinese restaurant, a bakery owned by a black woman. I believe there was another business owned by a black person, and then there was a business owned by a white person. But they weren't there protecting businesses based upon the race of people. They're answering the request to be protected, and they didn't consider a person's ethnicity in their in answering the call. There was also a group of, I don't know if this was a formal militia or just a group of blacks who had previously worked at a white-owned gas station that provided security for that gas station through the night, because they respected their employer so much they wanted to give back to him. So, you know, there was a lot of, interracial stuff here that was very positive. And it was all the voluntary efforts that were creating this unison, this uniting of things. And it was all the government-directed efforts that seemed to be dividing people into racial classes, which I thought was poorly thought out by the government officials.
Who's making the most noise about this as a racial issue is our own government.
So. Yeah. If I wasn't there, and I'm inviting anybody who's a representative of the Ferguson Police, the Missouri State Police, or St. Louis County Sheriffs, or the National Guard, anybody who's there as a member of that group who wants to call and contradict what I said or tell me I'm wrong, please do, because I'm just reading reports from reporters that I trust, and I believe that they're telling the truth because they have pictures to back it up. And we posted one of them on our Facebook page today of the bakery shop owner, Natalie, hugging a peacekeeper and saying, "Thank you for saving my business and my life." And that was just, every time I see that picture, it just puts a lump in my throat, because that's how it should be.
You know, Chuck, the thing that bothers us is that Oath Keepers is nonpartisan. We're non-party, nonpartisan people that we're just simply Americans, and we, you know, being accused of being racial and this and that, and Oath Keepers is, no, unfortunately, that's just rumor, and that's wrong. We don't tolerate that in an organization. We don't tolerate it. If there's any anybody who acts racial or makes any comments or statements, we don't want to hear it. We don't allow it. We went down there to help because they're Americans. Simple. We've got whites protecting blacks, blacks protecting whites, Asians, etc. It doesn't matter. We're doing what the government and the officials are refusing or failing to do.
That's right. And I just wonder if they're not going to do what they're paid to do. I mean, that is, I like how you describe yourself as a peace officer. That is how police were when I was young. So I'm a similar age of you, Tom. So, in those days, a policeman would risk his life to save somebody. They felt that was their duty. They were, it was like a warrior class. They believed that their duty was their reason for being there, and that they were not going to let that duty down. They were very brave, honorable people. Everybody respected them, looked up to them, because they knew that they had their back.
Well, the warrior class type of then days,
yes,
was to protect the people of your community, and that was the enemy, was the people who were going to hurt your community. So you had to protect them. And now nothing's really changed in that respect. It's just been modified a little bit to,
I think they've changed their programming. They're now being militarized by the federal government. They get federal government training, and they
no argument there.
No. And they're filling the police stations or the police companies all over the United States with these very expensive paramilitary things like MRAPs and
That was because of the 1033 program to the Pentagon, and
right.
And so, Drew had mentioned something earlier about bureaucrats, et cetera, running the violating these laws and just being arbitrary about the enforcing things. And what that really is it's not just law enforcement. It's the bureaucrats that are not elected, that are hired, that do not know or have a working knowledge of the Constitution or even basic laws of their state. And so they don't really understand it. So how can they enforce or support something they don't even have any knowledge of? Now, in the academies, you get some criminal law and civil law training and some constitution, but not enough, in my opinion. And a lot of us have made mistakes along the way during our career, finding out the hard way that, well, some things we shouldn't do. But you learn as you go. And unfortunately, you know, the courts will tell you that ignorance of the law is not an affirmative defense. Well, it works the same way around. And you got to hold those people liable and accountable for the laws that they're trying to enforce to understand those laws and the basis behind them.
Yes, and I just can't say enough good things about the work that Oath Keepers has done to show people that there are other things that they can turn to if their police force goes bad. I think that people in New Mexico, they ought to be forming Oath Keeper chapters all over the place down there, because they're going to need it if they don't replace their police force down there. It's a pretty dangerous place to visit, from in my opinion. Sure.
The whole country is getting that way anymore, and Oath Keepers is growing exponentially in a lot of areas because of what's happening in our government and in our country. Look where we were 10 years ago, a little bit better than we are now. And if you look around, all this despotism, we feel like porcupines being hit from every little angle by our federal government and our local government. But again, it goes back to knowledge of the Constitution, or lack thereof, and a refusal to obey it. Especially their oath under the Constitution, Oregon and the U.S. Constitution. They have to do it. It could even be construed as perjury if they fail to.
Yeah, and in the time after time, they seem to get off the hook. They and even when they're just, we don't want to have a system where the police are legally entitled oppressors, we call LEOs. Mm-hmm. We want it when they are liable to the same laws that everybody else is, and that they have to have a superior knowledge of what they can and can't do, so that they monitor their own actions to make sure they don't break laws and destroy or break their oath to defend and the Constitution from all enemies, including themselves.
But see, a lot of these people don't understand, or think they are honoring their oath to the Constitution. But then again, it goes back to knowledge of it.
Now, yes.
You get the basics in the academy, you know, the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, Fifth, and Sixth, et cetera. But how much in detail do you really understand that? And then a lot of the case law that followed after some of these cases, like Miranda versus Arizona, 1966, that still is a constant argument today in most criminal trials, whether or not Miranda was probably given, et cetera. But again, we're not an enforcement agency. We've got people coming to us saying, hey, these cops are doing this, these cops are doing that. But we'd like to direct them in the right direction to their leadership, and to have them handle these things internally, of course, if they can. If they're criminal, of course, then that takes another direction. But for the most part, law enforcement is a very rough job. It's a thankless job. It's changed over the past few years, and it does change according to society rules. It dictates it. So there's a lot of learning that we can do and understanding. Now, we consider all law enforcement as honoring their oath, and that's until proven otherwise. And if they show that, we don't deal well with those breakers. We try to reach, teach, and inspire them to understand what they're doing with the Constitution and to protect it. It's an obligation. It's a duty.
Well, I don't think this is a cause that you'll ever be able to retire. I think it's something we're going to have to be in constant vigilance. And that's what the message of the founders were to us, that if you want to stay free, you have to constantly have a state of vigilance about what is happening in your communities, because that's where it starts.
You have to. You got to know what's going on around you with your communities. Get to know your neighbors. You're going to need them one day. No question.
There's a lot of people listening to this that have never been to Medford, Oregon, don't know anything about Medford, Oregon, but we're building this new police headquarters. They're going to have their own parking garage where they can hide all these paramilitary vehicles away from the public, so they only come out during times of disturbance. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, oh, great. I think if you have to hide stuff like that, and you have to hide it away, and you can't and you can't bring it out and let the people know what's there, and so they can we can have an honest discussion about whether we really need this or not, and whether we should be spending this kind of money for something. You know, couldn't it be put into better use? So anybody in Medford is re-listening to this show, maybe we got to start questioning why do we have to have this special police parking garage just for them so they can do all their stuff without being observed by the public. And now, as it is, they come in and they put their stuff in their trunks and get their car loaded up. Someone can just stand there and watch them. I don't know why that's important to the police, but maybe there's some things they don't want them to see. I don't know. But so that was just for the people in Medford. I don't know how it is in all the other communities around the country, but I don't think most communities are rolling out this equipment very often because it's pretty expensive to run them. I hear they get several gallons to the mile.
About 6 miles to the gallon, I think.
I think it's more like 6 gallons to the mile than
probably is.
They're pretty big. They're pretty big, heavy units. They may have lightened them up, the ones that they're sending to the police forces. They're not like the ones that they were using in the war. But anyway, Brandon Smith, he's a writer for personalliberty.com. And I really like the things he writes. He's just, I think that he, like Drew, are just people that are so close to what I believe that they're just like, wow, I can't believe there's another person in the world that thinks the way I do. But he has this concept called a non-participation principle. It says you provide for yourself and others the necessities that a corrupt system cannot or will not. You remove your consent for the system to provide necessities for when it suits them. And eventually the elites of the system will have only one or two options: admit that you no longer need them and leave you in peace, or try to physically stop you from taking care of yourself. If the system tries to stop you, it must expose itself as inherently despotic and in the process lose public support. In either case, you win. And it's a very peaceful solution too. You're not threatening them with violence, and this isn't like the demonstrators are out there and they're making a situation bad. You know, they definitely had things that they had to emote about, but I think that people that were the residents of Ferguson were much more level-headed and calm than a lot of the people that poured in from outside the area. They had no problem with buildings burning down. They could just go home tomorrow, and it's no big deal for them. They didn't lose a job. They didn't lose the livelihood. They didn't do whatever. And so, that's what he lists as a non-participation principle. And then he goes on just to finish this up. He says it's vital that movement activists understand that our nation and perhaps the world have become targets of fourth-generation warfare, leading to artificial division, conflict, and very real self-destruction. If we are to respond, it must be with fourth-generation revolution. The methodology of the non-participation principle has been applied with great success in certain parts of the world, most recently in Ferguson, Missouri, by the constitutional organization Oath Keepers and its Community Preparedness Team program. So, and by the way, Brandon Smith, I believe, is an Oath Keeper up in Montana. So he is 100% behind you guys. And what you're doing is you're creating an obstacle for this total police state takeover that a lot of us are afraid might happen if someone doesn't do something. You are providing the proper blueprint for how it should be done. And what you did and even in the limited amount of response you were able to do in Ferguson, it was very effective. And it possibly, according to rumors, it possibly stopped a false flag event.
You know, it's very possible. We've been getting contacts from all over the country and other places requesting a little bit of assistance if we can provide it. I wanted to touch on one thing, though. We had, like, I understand, 2, maybe 3 police officers, current police officers from another state that were willing to go there and act as Oath Keepers did by preventing the same problems, you know. And these were commissioned officers that wanted to help. So there are officers that do want to help out there, but are restrained from doing so because of their brass that they're telling them not to. Now, you mentioned about 4 buildings that were protected. I believe there were more than that. And the reason was one of them, it was a strip mall with several businesses in it that was not touched.
Oh, okay.
some of the businesses around there that they knew that could be seen by oathkeepers on the roof, that they left them alone. So there was more to it than that. But again, the is the way I understand it, the feds were trying to push oathkeepers out of there and pressuring the brass from the St. Louis County, St. Louis PD, and the state police. However, the line cops, the regular patrolmen, loved us being out there. They were high-fiving you and everything. You know.
And that's what I think his name was Sam Shepard. That's what he was saying in his interview with Ben Swan.
Sure. And you got to ask yourself, why would the government not want to protect people and infrastructure and to stop this from happening? But yet it appears that they could be instigating it in one way or the other. Why would they and how would they pressure department heads of those agencies to act in that manner when they know that it's wrong? So there's something that they're holding back from them. And that could be anything from, and they'd never admit it, but grants and other favors, et cetera. You know, there's ways to get around things and to pressure agents, you know, police departments. But again, these guys are just doing an all-American thing and helping out, trying to keep the peace and acting in a position that is just good American willingness to help. That's all it is.
Yeah. I want to also add that the reporters that were there from InfoWars, Joe Biggs and Jakari Jackson, they also said that there was a distinct difference between the Ferguson police, the county police, and the Missouri State Police, and that the more local the police force was, where the people actually, you know, they knew who was who, they were the more effective people at maintaining order and protecting property. And as you move further away from the community with the police authority, they became much less effective and relied on force, sometimes abusive force, to get their desired outcome, in which they never were able to realize, because the force always makes people, it incites greater, the response is always more force coming back towards them. So it escalated things. What you're saying, what has been reported by, you know, in the Ben Swan interview with Sam Shepard and in the InfoWars reporters, all are saying the same thing. So I'm sure that's what happened. But if anybody from one of those police districts or police organizations wants to call and explain to me why they stood down while these buildings were being set afire, and there are people that have written long essays, there are fire marshals that say there's no way these buildings go up in flames that fast. There had to be people inside planting incendiary devices. This is definitely arson. It's planned. The bottles going through the windows and stuff are just the Molotov cocktails were just things to it's like the wick on the candle. It's just starting everything. It's lighting the fire, and then all those incendiary devices go off, and the things up just engulfed in flames. Almost, I think, was it 5 or 10 minutes?
Oh, it's quick.
And they said that's just impossible to do without some help on the inside.
Some type of accelerant.
Yeah.
You know, or length. But so look at what happened with these instigators as well. Why in the hell is our federal government involving itself in a local criminal matter that could taint, which obviously has tainted the case? And Officer Wilson would, even if indicted, would never get a fair trial anywhere in the United States because of this. They sent three representatives from the White House under Valerie Jarrett to the funeral service for that young man. They didn't send anybody to check on the police officer, and they're involving themselves in this case, and now it's not going to be criminal, but it's going to be a civil matter. Look at Sharp Tongue and Alice Jackson, what they're doing is stirring up dissent and they're causing more problems than what they're actually doing. They've been asked to stay away from certain places, including Ferguson, but they're buddying up with the federal government. So who's really instigating this? Who is behind this, and why? Okay.
Yeah, I think that the why question is really important, because it's
how about creating racial division to create civil unrest, and then bring in the police to create martial law, to create all this upheaval and tumultuous behavior so that they can come in and save the day.
Well, here's some examples. The CIA, for sure, was known to put the underwear bomber on the plane that left from Africa to here. There are eyewitnesses that saw guys in really expensive suits and dark glasses come and get this guy. They talk to him a little bit, whatever, and then they go and they say, well, he doesn't have a passport, he can't get on the plane. They say, well, he's getting on the plane, and they just show him their credentials and they allow him on the plane, and then he's the underwear bomber. And then all of a sudden we have all the airports need to have these scanners, the Pornitron machines, for anybody that's flying because of the underwear bomber. Well, they create the problem, they have the solution ready to roll out, and somebody in the business of making those scanners is making a ton of money selling them to every airport in the world.
I'd like it to follow the money trail on that.
Yeah, it's the Hegelian dialectic. I think Ferguson is they're trying to create a bigger problem than it was, so they could have more militarized police and more police state crackdown. That would seem to be if that's the kind of way they roll on all their problems. I think a lot of these mass shootings are not real either. Some of them may be. It's hard to tell.
Well, Judge Napolitano had spoken about the 20 of the cases that the FBI have investigated of domestic terrorism, and the three that they solved were the ones that they had. Let's see, what was it? 17 of those cases that they had manufactured themselves, the FBI.
Yeah, so it's... And,
but then they solve their own case, so they give themselves an attaboy. I don't get it. But,
and then they ask for more funding.
Yeah, and it's just for a reason. Now, the entire, you can blame all of our problems on the federal government, the Congress, and the Senate, because you know they hold the strings to the purse and they keep funding everything. We've got rhinos in there. We've got basically all Democrats. To me, they're all Democrats. They're all working for the same objective, and number one is them, their own personal agendas, and they're trying to control the masses through political gains. They've got 2 years now to really do a lot of damage to the United States, and I think you're going to see an acceleration and more civil unrest and definitely financial problems. Christmas is rolling around. People are having a hard enough time. But it's not like Christmas from the last year or the last 2 years, is it? It's something in the air, and people just don't feel good about anything anymore. I'm very concerned about what's around the corner, and I'm hoping that people are preparing themselves for the worst-case scenario, hoping for the best. If they don't, there's something wrong. Look around you and look at everything that's come in. Remember I talked about feeling like a porcupine. Every day you read about this stuff in the newspaper and you hear it on the TV. We're surrounded by it. So the red flags are all over the place. Why are people failing to look at folks and pick up on these things and instead of easily just accepting what the government tells us is truth? It's not.
Drew, I wanted to get your take too on the non-participation plan and what you thought of that.
Well, I think it's great. It's similar to the principles of agorism,
mm-hmm.
and voluntarism and anarchism. And so, I never heard it put that way, but I agree with it wholeheartedly. I actually live by it. So I would encourage others to attest
to that too, well. By the way.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really the best way to defeat this system is to stop participating in it, withdraw from it. Don't feed it. Work outside of it, work against it whenever possible. And instead of trying to change the system within, work to create a whole new system, which isn't that hard. What we're talking about is a different way of not really organizing people. It's just changing the community of people that you associate with. You engage in business activities with like-minded people under terms that you agree upon without looking to the government to define those terms or to enforce those terms even. And so this can be done just through the actions of individuals. Eventually, the state will just become irrelevant. It'll wither away. And we need to start this now. And then we need to get younger people involved too. That's really critically important that we get young people involved in this, because in order to defeat this system, the work is going to take, you know, several generations, I think, if we could survive all of this, to completely do away with it.
But, well, the younger generation needs the older generation to help guide them to get them in the right direction. Most of them don't even know their history. So it's our responsibility to make sure they go and travel in a smooth path.
Yeah, a lot of us think we know history, and then we do some research and realize that we had it all wrong.
It was given to us wrong, yes.
I'm holding my hand up as one of those people. You know, I loved history so much. It was easy for me just to continue reading. And then I started finding things that were contradictory. I said, well, which side's right? And then I was able to figure it out myself, thank God. And you know, I can realize when I'm being told something that isn't quite true now. And I think it's also good to know history of the rest of the world, too, not just the United States. There's a lot of things that happen around the world, the history of humanity, that are really important. They give important lessons to everything. Brandon Smith, in his other article that he wrote for this week, he was talking about when Lenin first took over Russia, the Bolshevik Revolution. He was notorious for having a police force that they were called the Chechkas, and they would randomly go around and arrest people just because they felt they needed to fill the prisons up to intimidate the population, to get them to do whatever the government said. And these people, even the ones who were being arrested, couldn't believe that this was happening to them, because most of them were supporters of Lenin. And they said, well, it must be a bureaucratic mistake. I'm sure I just write some letters, they'll get me out of here. But that it never happened. And eventually, over time, people began to realize what was happening to them, and you know that the game was, you know, their goose was cooked. They'd lost control of this, and we can learn from that kind of history. We don't want to get into that situation in this country, because once they have the power to lock people up, and they have these detainment centers all over the country, people they call FEMA camps, and they're not meant to get broken out of easily, and they can just start packing people in there and tell people, hey, you don't want to be doing this. You're going to end up in a FEMA camp.
Well, Chuck, tell me something. What do they do generally in history to the populace before they get to that point?
They take away their guns.
Good point. What I wanted to bring up is this Saturday up in Washington State, we're holding a rally there on the 13th, Saturday from 11 to 3 at the state capitol, Gateway Park, in Olympia. Sheriff Mack will be there, Mike Vandenberg, Coke Reynolds, Amon Bundy is going to be there, Representative Elizabeth Scott, and a lot more. And Matt Shea will be there from Washington State. And it's arguing over the new measure they passed up there, 594, the Second Amendment issue. You know, we're pretty tired of this type of stuff, and we're going to let them know that we are totally against their laws, especially now that Oregon, the Democrats hold the House and Senate, they're doing the same thing. And so we've got a lot of fights against going against this. So I wanted to bring that up and plug that a little bit, because it's really important.
That's very important. This is in response to the UN Declaration and Christmas Eve gun grab?
Well, no, it's actually the Washington State just passed a measure
isn't it supposed to be nationwide? The UN says the U.S. citizens have to give up their gun rights.
Well, that's two separate issues. Yeah, UN has got that, but the United States Senate has to.
I think President Obama has pledged to go around the Congress, because this is such an important issue.
Let him. Moulin Labe is what I say.
Yeah. Well, then, hopefully if he tries that will be the last straw. And if the Congress won't impeach him, we'll start recalling everybody that won't.
Well, it's going to be the UN is not going to be welcome here, but they are going to bring us some gear. So, anyway, if we can get people up there, we'd certainly appreciate it. We've also got some another ones coming up in January, I believe, and February. If people will go to our website at oroathkeepers.org, and they can check on the links there as well and some of the other events. And there's a button on there for our meetup site. If people go on there and click on it, they can sign up to get notifications of when and where our next meetings and events are. They're free, open to the public, and how they can join our organization. We need a lot of people, and this is the time to do it. I'll tell you that.
It is, and it's really painless to sign up. It's a good feeling. I'm not normally a joiner, but this is something that I felt good about doing. So
you want to do it before, not after. You know, be proactive instead of reactive. Imagine this, you know, guys. If you've got when it hits the fan, which we know it's going to, how many people are going to look around and say, "What do we do next? Where do we go? Who do we call?" And you know, we're going to be on that list, and maybe not have a lot of time to help get people prepared to. You know, that they should have done in the first place. There's so much going around.
It also, for those of you who might be a little bit worried about being on a list like this, I tell you, if our numbers swell to the numbers that they should, then I think that will be an intimidating force that the other side knows, hey, wait a minute, look at all these people that have signed up. And
absolutely, it's part of it. But one thing is, we don't even give out a membership.
They have a huge army of people that are just it's grassroots. There's no, you know, there's a loose organization, and the people are all volunteering to do this. And we can't get people to volunteer to go over to the Middle East, but they're getting almost everybody in the country is signing up for this. And the only people that aren't are the. I don't know, I guess the people that are on our side, and we're way outnumbered.
Well, I wanted to mention something.
If they realize that, then that's going to make a big difference.
You know, Chuck, the thing is, you said something about people are worried about being under the radar. You're right, and we get a lot of that. But I got to express this. Everybody is above radar. There's no getting under it now. The technology is too far out there. You can't escape it. You can try. And you can hope, but the reality is you're not going to escape it. We're all out here with targets on our back, but we're doing it for our country and our future. If we don't, it's going to go straight to hell. And it is going there now. But we've got to stop it before it gets sucked into that socialist vacuum and turn our youngsters around. Get this country. Give it back to them. They deserve it. They don't deserve to pay for our mistakes. And if people really care about their kids, they won't care what kind of mark they're making. They want to get up there and stop it. Go to their parent and teacher conferences. Stop Common Core. Go to the city council. Stop these things that are happening that is wrong, that violate our constitution. By God, get our country back.
Yep. And it's not just this police state that they're trying to take us down with. There's a lot of financial malfeasance that's going on. There's
Yeah, ask Hillary.
They've actually destroyed our money through the Federal Reserve. I know the dollar's the new penny, is the way I look at it. A dollar buys about what a penny did when the Fed started in 1913.
You know, people think that the way to do it is to stop paying your taxes. That's not going to work anymore. All they do is create more fiat money out of thin air, so they can continually supply themselves perpetually on our backs, regardless if we pay them or not.
Mm-hmm. And they're, I think the ways of non-participation are very effective because you can start to do some things. I'm not a huge fan of barter, but in this case, I think that's an effective protest, and that you can do in exchanges with people that are voluntary, with no force involved, that don't have any monetary consequence in terms of a reporting. Because I'm giving you this pack of cigarettes, and you're giving me that pint of booze or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You're just trading stuff, and it's, nobody's making any money. You're exchanging, and well, that's if you do it that way. There's no tax consequences. Well, I picked two items that are taxed. I should have picked two other items instead of cigarettes and booze. But maybe everybody gets the idea, though.
Sure.
Drew's been talking about this since the day I met him, and I think it's just awesome. He's a big proponent of agorism, which is what this is representing.
Yep.
And I think that non-participation in everything you do, it's not just in terms of your protection rackets or the ways you protect your property. It's the way you conduct all your business. There's a lot of banks are trying to get rid of cash, make us a cashless society. Well, if they do that, if you're a working guy for somebody else, you're just trapped in the system. You're basically a slave at that point. They put your money in their bank for your work, and then they allow you to take part of it out while they send the rest of it to the government, and in lieu of taxes. And if you ever get behind in taxes or do something wrong, they'll just take everything in your account, and so they'll have another way to control you by doing that. So don't let them do that, people. Cash is probably one of your last freedoms. You better keep it, even if it's a worthless cash like the Federal Reserve notes. It's as long as people still accept them, it's still a way you can have a discreet transaction without being everybody in the government knowing about it. And so, if you wanted to purchase a gun or some ammunition, you could do it with cash, and you don't necessarily have your name recorded in some federal list of people's homes to go search.
Yeah, did you see that one article that the police department back in Wisconsin wanted to search people's homes, volunteer to have their home searched for weapons that have been used in crimes? I heard the chief had just since rescinded that. So,
yeah, that was one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard. And they'll say, well, since this works so well, we're going to make it mandatory. And
oh, and they wanted they'd take in toy guns that, look like.
Well, this is how they escalate these situations, and then they say, then they claim you have guns, and you may have sold it to somebody else, whatever. And they won't take your word for it, or even if you have a receipt that you gave the guy or a copy of the bill of sale to somebody.
Why should you? You're guilty until proven innocent.
And they will just use this as an excuse to get in somebody's face that they want to put them down, punish them, get them out of the system, intimidate them. It's just another law that they can bend and twist to make the effect that they want. And so it's, we've said this before, government has one weapon, and it's this like 1,000-pound hammer that they drop on people. And when they see problems out there, everything looks to them like it's a nail. It needs that 1,000-pound hammer. And so that's how they deal with everything. Is they just, they come down hard on you, and there's no mercy. These people have no soul.
Well, they can reach into your pocket too.
Yes, they do, and you'll be paying for that hammer.
Mm-hmm. It's just so unfortunate. The despotism that the American people are being subjected to, and it's not being ignored. It's being seen across the world. People are seeing how it's happening to us, and the former, some of these communist countries are warning us, saying, "Hey, pay attention to what's going on around you."
I know.
If it's a duck and it sounds like a duck, walks like a duck, he's a communist duck.
if it's quacking communist slogans, it's a communist duck. Yes,
that's right. There's no question about it.
And I've in my two travels this year, I went to Ecuador, which is still a socialist country, which is basically communist. They've reformed.
One step from.
Well, it's pretty close to the same thing. It's the differences are so minor. It's they're both collectivist states.
Well, the next step is to communism. So yeah.
But regardless of that, they've had to institute reforms to keep people to have some kind of hope or reason to want to exist, because they were rather a police, pretty tough police state 20 years ago. And as they've loosened up and allowed a little more freedom, they've become a little more prosperous. And the country's it's developing slowly. There's the people in charge are still reluctant to give full control, but they have people that understand free market economics and understand how effective freedom is and raising people out of poverty, and they're trying to institute all these reforms, and it's actually moving in the right direction. I don't think they're going to get there very fast, because there's a lot of inertia that has to be overcome, you know, and change direction of the ship, but they're moving in that direction, and there's a lot of Americans that retire and go there to live, because it's a really inexpensive standard of living there. You can eat out every meal for less than $10 a day.
Hey, that's all great, but are you giving up essential liberties for?
Not that I noticed. There's a few things. Your Social Security income is coming in from outside of Ecuador. It's not taxed. There's no sales tax. The property taxes are very small because the people can't afford very much. So as long as you don't live in some extravagant mansion, you're probably not going to have a lot of your income siphoned off by the government. It is going to circulate in their economy, and someone else will pay tax on the stuff they sell you, the profits that they make. But it's a pretty good it's a pretty safe place, not as safe as I would like, but you can live in areas that are safer. If you don't go around and flaunt your wealth, then they're probably not going to try and take it from you. But if I used to be in the jewelry business, so I have some nice jewelry. If I was wearing that around all the time, I would expect I would get robbed eventually. So it's not that safe, but the people that I met there, that I talked to, though, they're really nice. They're great people. They understand what they're up against. They really do, and they're trying to get more economic freedom. A lot of them have gone to schools in the United States or in other places that have more freedom, and they're bringing it back to their country. So, you know, that's a country that's moving more towards freedom. Now, I look at our country. We're moving away from freedom, more towards where they were.
Yep.
And at some point in time in the future, we're going to pass in terms of one country being more free than the other, and Ecuador will be more free than us unless we change course and go back towards freedom.
We don't change it. We're going to be a one world government. We're all going to be the same.
Right
we're
now, the
third world entity now.
Right now, the number one destination for American Social Security recipients that expatriate themselves is Ecuador, because it's an inexpensive place to live.
Maybe we need to go in there and invade that place.
The number one destination for expats who are still productive and are earning money and, you know, pay taxes is Panama, because it's also a really good economy. It's a very good economy, and it's actually, I haven't been there. I can't attest to this personally, but I hear that it's, in a lot of respects, it has more freedoms than the United States has.
Well, I don't know how good it is in those places. Why are they all coming here?
Panamanians aren't.
Okay.
Every government is going to have its problems, and by and large, we worry about immigrants from Mexico coming to the United States. Last year, there were more Mexicans that went back to Mexico than came into the United States. I think what we're getting now is we're getting the flood of people trying to avoid arrest. Basically, the criminal class is coming across the border, which is not a good thing. And a lot of the people that were here to work are finding the good, you know, the jobs that they were coming here for are kind of disappearing, and they're going back to Mexico to because they like it better there.
Well,
so there's the other Central American countries. Some of them are not doing so well, and there are still a lot of those people are traveling through Mexico on their way to the border and coming into the United States. That'd be Honduras and Nicaragua. Some of them from Guatemala.
Well, we're also getting everything bad coming through this, Chuck, with not just Hispanics, but we're also getting a lot of people from the Middle East who are coming in, and you've got Al-Qaeda. You've got working with the cartels there. They're finding
Islamic literature and books along the border that fall out of people's knapsacks or whatever, or they discard.
Well, the city of Juarez is being ran by cartels, and with these Muslim Brotherhoods, they're working in unison down there. So those people are in and coming through now, as we speak, in our sovereign United States, and there's no door to close. So if you
That's
were an
right.
enemy, wouldn't you rush through that door like a Trojan horse? It's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the Juarez, the people have never been to El Paso. Juarez and El Paso are really the same city. There's no line, even with the border and the fence. You can see where the border is, but the city doesn't. It just stops because there's a river there. But it continues on the other side of the city. It's pretty continuous. It's like any city with a river running through it. And a lot of the people in El Paso work in Juarez, and they go there in the morning to work. And a lot of people in Juarez work in El Paso, and they'll drive across the border and work there. And there's a lot of traffic going by every day. And to stop and check all those cars is really a problem. So it's pretty easy for
people from the Arab countries. It's not just going through a border checkpoint. It's going across the river. It's going through vehicles.
Well, a lot of them are just driving across. But people from the Middle East, they tend to look a little bit like the Hispanics, and so they don't really generate a lot of suspicion.
They look like somebody who's Mexican and learning Mexican.
Yeah, so maybe if you would say to them something in Spanish, it wouldn't take very much to trip them up. I mean,
that's right. That's what they're doing.
And you could just have that. You say "Hola, ¿cómo estás?" and then you ask them where you're going or something in Spanish. Whatever. My Spanish isn't very good right now.
¿Dónde?
Yeah. And if they're having a little trouble responding, then you might want to say, "We want to pull over here, please."
And you could probably raise up and say,
"Yeah." And you could stop that.
Sure.
But in the meantime, you can let all the other people, without ever even saying anything more than you're just saying it with a smile, and people think you're just being courteous and friendly. You could probably stop a lot of the people that may be trying to come across the border that shouldn't be by just something as simple as that, and you don't have to interfere with everybody else's life.
Right. Well, here's the bottom line. We don't have any borders there anymore. They're putting their Border Patrol agents in jeopardy of everything from, getting hit in the head with rocks, getting shot, killed, getting diseased and taking that home to your children and your wife. Some guys haven't even gone home because of that. This was a couple months back. I heard that guys were staying here at the station because they don't want to take it home to their families. I mean, it just, if you get that, and then you think of all the people who are getting infected by it, it's sad.
Well, I hear the music, so it's time to say goodnight for another Thursday night edition of Double Crossed Radio. We'll see you next Thursday. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a good week. Temperature still to rise. So one more time.